It is a little cooler today in Oregon and Washington State, thank goodness, after a heat dome baked the Pacific Northwest with triple-digit temperatures for several days in a row. Now, as many as a dozen deaths may be tied to that heat, and those deaths worry people who organize support services for the homeless community, including Jimmy Jones. He's executive director of the Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency in Salem, Oregon. His team has been out distributing water and arranging medical transports for people who've been living outside. Jimmy, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. It's good to be here.
Salem hit 117 degrees on Monday. First of all, just what was that like? Have you ever felt anything like it before?
Well, for this particular area where you have an average high temperature of about 81, 82 degrees in this time of June, it was a very shocking event. And especially since, you know, so many folks in the Pacific Northwest do not have air conditioning like households in the rest of the country. So this was a devastating event for a lot of people who aren't used to this kind of heat.
Well, in fact, it is dangerous, right? I mean, the National Weather Service said that it's now the highest recorded temperature west of the Cascades in the Pacific Northwest. How did your community experience that heat?
So it was a very difficult moment in a lot of different ways. To kind of turn back the clock a little bit, we've been through a series of just really trying moments over the course of the last 18 months. Like everyone else, we've been dealing with the COVID crisis here in Oregon. But, you know, in addition to that, you know, we had in our community here in Marion County, we had the Labor Day fires over in early September, which devastated eastern Marion County, especially the Santiam Canyon area. And then in February, just 4 months ago, we had the worst ice storm in living memory for everyone. 70% of Marion County lost power for up to a week. And many of our homeless population here are chronically homeless. They've been homeless for quite some time. They have associated disabling conditions, quite frequently physical health conditions. And, you know, we have just been through this year in which we've had an enormous number of people pass away. Some passed away outside, some passed away because they got struck by a vehicle, some passed away from drug overdoses, some passed away from medical conditions in the hospital. We lost about 30 in the last year, which is about twice the normal number of folks that we lose. So adding this moment on top of all of those was incredibly difficult for our community. Folks are reticent to come into cooling centers. They don't want to leave their encampments because they're afraid that their property may be stolen or someone may tear up their tent. So, you know, they tend to wait a little bit too long sometimes. And we had quite a few heat-related medical problems. A couple people passed away in a neighboring community.
So it sounds like this was just the latest in a string of very difficult things that have happened to your community there. But how did you prepare? You know, I see that you opened up 9 cooling centers around the city. You distributed almost 3,600 bottles of water, 1,000 pounds of ice. I mean, were you ready for what was coming?
Well, we're never really ready for events like this because the forewarning is often very short in time. But our deployment was actually really good given the short notice that we had.
You mentioned some deaths because of this heat. Tell me what you know about those and how they happened.
Well, in a neighboring town, Bend, Oregon, and it's a couple hours east of here, they had a couple of deaths there that were believed to be heat-related. Of course, it's sometimes hard to, you know, to discern what the actual situation was this quickly. They're being investigated. We had a farm worker death in a small town called St. Paul, not far from here. We had 6 people that we interacted with alone in the homeless community that we arranged for medical transport because they were in a state of distress from the environmental conditions. And then we have one report of one homeless individual living over here near the interstate who did pass away. I'm a little bit hesitant to talk too much about that because I don't have all the details. And in a lot of times in the homeless community, information travels by word of mouth, so sometimes the context is lost. So I need to investigate that a little bit more before I can say with any degree of certainty what happened there.
Understanding how dangerous the heat is when it descends on a place for several days in a row, was there a sense of dread among people who didn't have shelter that this was coming and it was going to be bad?
There was a sense of dread. A lot of times people don't take it seriously until it gets to be, you know, a very dangerous situation. So we saw a little bit of that, people having some reticence to come into cooling centers. We've been running cooling centers out here for for about 4 years now, and they are always undersubscribed. People generally don't come to them unless they are in a state of real distress. We have a river that runs through the middle of Salem, and a lot of people go down to the river to get into the water and get cool. So that's always been one of the common coping mechanisms and strategies that the homeless population has when it comes to extreme weather events.
Your governor, Kate Brown, recently signed a bill that would require tracking the deaths of people who are homeless, and it would have to be noted on the death certificate if they didn't have shelter at the time of their death. How important is a bill like that, and what would it do to help situations like this?
Well, it's very important, and it's one that I worked on quite consistently. There's just so much information out there that we don't have and so much information that the public doesn't have about the consequences of living in these unsheltered environments. And, you know, without that information, it's really easy to ignore this. It's real convenient to ignore this because that information sort of compels action. It suggests responsibility, and it encourages people to do something about this just insufferable human condition that people are quite frequently living in outside. And I hope that it will lead to better social service outcomes down the road.
I'm hearing what you're telling me about the deaths that you've experienced there in your community, about the heat wave that just came. You also mentioned the fires that have caused major problems in your area, and they have across the West. They're just getting worse. Do you also worry about the way a warming climate and climate change will be affecting people who are living without permanent shelter?
Oh, absolutely, because generally when you look around the world at what the consequences of global warming have been already, the populations that are being impacted the most and the first are the people in abject poverty, the people without adequate shelter, the people without adequate medical care, the people without the ability to seek safe shelter. And as our situation in the West, as most of your listeners will know, has just deteriorated in terms of the fires over the last 20 years, it is getting to be a graver and graver concern every year. I was just in a meeting with the Department of Human Services yesterday, and we were having conversations about what our plans are going to be for the upcoming fire season. You know, these kinds of events that we're talking about here, added on top of that, we can have very devastating consequences.
I can tell you're the kind of guy who cares about other people as much or more than yourself. And it's been a pretty tough year for everybody. How are you holding up? I mean, how are you doing?
Well, we're doing okay. You know, when you get into this work, there are a lot of different reactions to it. Some people care so much that after you see the kinds of human suffering that we see on a fairly regular basis, a lot of people just get burned out and they leave the work, they leave the profession, and they just can't take one more death. They can't take one more tragedy. They can't take one more story about the suffering that people experience in these unsheltered conditions. The other danger is, you know, you've lived through so much of it, you become kind of callous to it. You struggle to find empathy. And so to be able to stay in the work long term, you have to find a balance between those two extremes to kind of keep going. This has, without a doubt, been the most difficult year of all of our lives doing this work between COVID and, you know, a lot of our clients didn't end up getting the virus in Oregon, because in part we have so many unsheltered people living outside in a perfectly socially distanced environment. But at the same time, so many services got shut down and reduced. Access to medical care was more difficult. We operate day centers, and normal capacity in a day center is around 80 people. Well, we had to drop that to 10 at one point in time, and eventually it came back up to 20 and 25 and now 30. And now as of today, the governor has ended the emergency order here in Oregon, and, you know, basically the state is reopened. So we'll get back to a 100% capacity there. But COVID made everything so much harder. But then on top of that, we had the Labor Day fires. We had this terrible ice storm and a fairly rough winter overall. And then just, you know, 4 months later, where the sun is baking us off the surface of the earth. So this has been a really challenging 18 months, without a doubt.
Wow. Jimmy Jones, Executive Director of the Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency in Salem, Oregon. Hang in there, and thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you. It's great to be here today.